Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, it's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward. Together, that's exactly where we're going to go. God bless
you. I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
And this is Rewind for the week that the governor dropped his 2017-2019 budget on the legislature. He calls it a reform dividend budget, saying that the money, I think he put it at $5 billion, they saved through Act 10, can now be invested. Now, JR, what that means, you and I know, is he's got an awful lot of spending in this 2017-2019 budget. It's kind of like a train. You know, that old, what was the movie, Throw Mama from the Train? Yeah. He throws money from the train.
Well, he's got three good things going for him in this budget financially. One, we have a surplus projected at the end of this budget, so it's like $400-some million there. Two, we have additional revenue growth than what we were expecting before. And then three, Medicaid continues to improve. We were expecting, I believe, in September, now just since September, DHS thought it needed $450-some million more to cover Medicaid. That's down to $279 or something like that. Yeah. I mean, that's where a lot of his money comes from to take care of what he's calling the reform dividend.
But when you look at the numbers, if you look at the 6 years he's been in office, I went back and looked at his proposed spending in 2017, GPR only, $34.5 billion. Roll that back to 6 years he's been in office. I'm not taking as my base year the last Doyle biennium budget. And you have a spending increase of 20% over 6 years. And if you look at inflation, the CPI, it's only 10%. Mm-hmm. So it's a big spending budget, and we'll talk later about how that gives legislators, that has them reaching for Tums, right?
Yes. Tums and figuring out where they can move money from.
Right. But if you go to page 50 on the budget in brief, okay, I'm getting a little wonky here, mm-hmm. and you look at how he spends down the available balance, that's very intriguing. The budget balance mid-2017, fiscal year 2017, upper, 388,
yep.
then walk that down under, if his budget became law, to 228 to $7.7 million at the end of this biennium. But the number that the CPA caucus is going to go bonkers and have their heads going to explode, potential deficit, 264 of at the end of the fiscal 2020. Now let's add the caveats. It doesn't include increased tax yep. revenues or cut spending. But this is the type of thing that the CPA caucus is going to focus on.
Well, the structural deficit, we call it, what the next budget would look like if this one passes, doesn't take in account revenue growth, for example. That number also is one of the smallest numbers we've seen. I think we've had, what, one surplus in the last 15, 18 years? So it's not a bad number in some ways. But what walked into this budget, which is really kind of interesting, is he basically spent all this extra money or put it into pots that are popular.
Yeah.
So if lawmakers don't want to do what he wants to do, they're the bad guys who have to take it out of K-12 spending, take it out of UW. If you don't want to do self-insurance, fine, but there's $60 million in savings he's assuming from that.
Right.
You're half of it to K-12, so then you don't do self-insurance state employees, you're taking money from school kids. It makes lawmakers the bad guy if they move stuff around.
Right, and let's talk about, as you alluded to, just the K-12 spending number.
Mm-hmm.
And these are numbers we didn't know a week ago when we taped the last Rewind. He's going up $200 per pupil in the first year, fiscal 18, $204 in the second year, but he has this very unique wrinkle. To get this, district must be in compliance with Act 10, 2011, our old friend Act 10, which means that their employees must contribute 12% towards their health care.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I was in the press room yesterday, but I haven't been able to get a number. How many districts are out of compliance? Do you know?
Good question. The one that we always talk about is Madison. That's the kind of the most high-profile one, but I'm hearing bits and pieces of other districts that maybe don't quite hit 12% because they did, when they worked their teachers, they did like these little kind of like, we'll not have you pay 12, but you'll do this instead.
Right.
So how's that all going to work out? It's still kind of unclear, too, with the budget proposal, what compliant means, when they have to be in compliance, who's going to. So that's still to be determined at this point, how it's all going to work out. I'm very interested to watch how that plays through. Now, with the K-12 spending overall, yeah, pull back a little bit, kind of understand that Walker, for the first 6 years of it being in office, has mostly, not everything, but mostly been concerned about putting money in the schools to drive down property taxes. So spending has been fairly flat for schools. What he's doing here is rather than putting into a formula where we take property tax money and state aid to pay for schools.
Right.
There's this new per pupil categorical aid, we call it, right? It's a straight per pupil payment. He's doing it through those that payment. That way, every district gets treated the same. Yep. Now, if you are a poorer district, wealth, you know, property base wise, you're not going to get more money than a wealthy district. You get the same amount.
Right.
So for the districts that typically are by Republicans, they're going to get treated the same. That makes it more palatable for those guys to have that big increase because their district can make out okay. Versus if you did the general school aids formula, Milwaukee, Beloit, those are going to do better than
they
like places.
They would make out better.
Yeah.
So you have him going away from the old equalization formula, mm-hmm. don't you?
Yeah.
And the good news, as you said, is the districts, here's a check for 200 more per pupil if you comply with Act 10. And the bad news is you're not closing the gap between the richest and the poorest districts, which, as you said, the collar districts and the Milwaukee suburbs, they come out the best out of this formula.
And we had Scott Fitzgerald, the Senate Majority Leader, at luncheon yesterday for WisPolitics.com. He said, basically, I guarantee you there'll be more money in schools when this is all said and done. I'm not sure it's going to be what Walker wants because his overall package is $649 million.
Yes.
509 of that alone goes into this per pupil aid.
Yeah, the 200 and 204.
Some lawmakers are going, whoa, that's a whole lot of money. That's as much as what Tony Evers, the DPI superintendent, wanted, essentially. Why are we going that far? So maybe they pare it back and then move money elsewhere. But again, they're the bad guys. I know for Walker, who we think is going to win for re-election 2018, can say, hey, I set up my own party even mm-hmm. to try and fight for schools in UW in this budget, and they went against me.
Yeah. Okay, and you and I talked about in the State of the State in January, he surprised everybody. The tuition at the UW resident undergrad is going to go down, and this is what he said about how much in his budget message.
To help improve student success, the UW system will receive an increase of more than $100 million in this state budget. Now, working with the UW... Working with the UW Board of Regents, we're building a performance-based system for new funds. That will include criteria like the number of graduates, the length of time to graduate, how many graduates are employed, and how many are in high-demand areas within the state. We want student success to help fuel the growth of the Wisconsin economy. We also include a system to reward professors who spend more time teaching. This will reverse a nationwide trend where professor time in the undergraduate classroom is down while tuition has gone up. In fact, nationally, it's up about four times the rate of inflation since 1978. Wisconsin needs to be a leader in providing quality higher education that is indeed affordable. That's why our budget also includes the largest investment in history for need-based financial assistance for students at colleges and universities all across the state. And to make our public institutions even more affordable, I am proud to announce our budget reduces tuition for undergraduates from Wisconsin by 5% at all UW campuses.
Here's what we learned, JR. He's going to freeze tuition at the tech colleges.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to freeze tuition the next school year at the UW.
Yep.
So his 5% cut in resident undergrad tuition, not until the 18-19 academic year.
Yes.
And he scores it at a cost of $35 million, which is going to save students and their parents. And he also, though, is requiring this unique publication, the compilation publication of how many professors teach how long and faculty members teach, and he wants to use that as a benchmark. And he said in his speech, that'll be a way to reward professors who teach the most. That's pretty intriguing. That's not going to be very popular at the other end of State Street.
No, but I also can pretty much bet you money that $35 million is not going to be there in this process. Because what the governor has done is, every budget I've covered, there are pots of money that you can grab from. It's a matter of whether you have the political wherewithal to do it. And for lawmakers, they're going, okay, wait a second. We don't like X, Y, and Z in your budget. We don't like how much is going to transportation.
Mm-hmm.
There is $35 million just sitting there. It's just so tempting, Steve, to go grab that money and say, you know, tuition cut doesn't really help everybody. It's already eighth lowest in the Big Ten. So let's think about where else we put that money to better use. I'm just theorizing here. What might be the argument when this is all said and done? But they're going to grab that money, I can almost bet, and redirect it somewhere else. Just like the governor touted $20 million for the rainy day fund. It's not required by statute. Remember, we have a statute that says you have X month surplus, you have to put it in the rainy day fund. It's not because of that. He's just doing it because he thinks it's a good idea. That's easy pickings for lawmakers to grab that money.
Well, before we go back to the UW budget, there's another pot of money. I don't think any of those legislators knew that we were getting $42 million as a result of the Volkswagen emission cheating scandal.
Yes.
And we'll get into that, how he wants to use that. But that's another pot of money. But going back to the UW for a little bit, he wants to require that students complete an internship before they get a UW System diploma, which is interesting, because I wonder if some students would not be able to get an internship, or how do you define internship? You know what I mean?
What if you want to be an academic, for example?
That's true. And UW System must develop 3-year graduation options. So
I think
now
it's like 60% of degrees at one point have to have a 3-year roadmap. That's been interesting to see as well. There's also, I mean, remember with higher education, there's all kinds of accreditation requirements.
Yeah.
So how's that all going to fit together? I mean, overall, this budget for UW is really good. I mean, if you, because by comparison, like go back to last one, you proposed a $300 million cut, ended up taking a $250 million hit because finance restored $50 million.
Yeah, over two.
And what Walker's doing is he's, one, there was a lapse in this budget. Remember, lapse is where I say, I'm giving you $50 but taking back $25.
Yep.
The lapse is going to go away. He's counting that as a boost for UW. They get $42.5 million that they wanted, they asked for. That's going to be kind of tied to incentives. They're getting a block grant of $11.6 million, I think, to pay for pay raises. And there's this tuition money.
So $35 million.
Overall, that's a relief for UW compared to the last couple of budgets. But how's it going to look once, like Robin Voss saying, I don't think tuition is a good thing. Let's look at financial aid instead.
Right.
These other priorities. How's it going to look when they're all said and done? That's the question I have.
That's true. He also is taking a big bet on self-insuring for state employees, mm-hmm. which he wants to start January 1 of 2018, and let's listen to about a minute of him talking about that, how he introduces that subject.
We spent more than a year examining ways to improve how government provides health insurance to state employees. The Commission on Government Reform, Efficiency, and Performance reports that 46 states have some form of self-insured plan, and nearly half of those states are fully self-insured, including our neighbor, Minnesota. As you think about this reform, consider this. Across our state, employers, healthcare systems, schools, institutions of higher education, and others are successfully using self-insurance plans to make healthcare affordable for their employees and to make their dollars go further. We can do the same. Moving the state to a self-insured plan, we believe, will save Wisconsin taxpayers at least $60 million during this budget cycle. As promised, we put that money entirely into public education. Part of it will go to our K-12 public schools, and part of it will go to the UW system.
Tanner, I see the self-insurance thing as a pretty big bet. Mm-hmm. Because remember the consultants for the self-insurance board? Some of them said, yes, Governor and Ledge, you can save $60 million. Others warned that you could lose $100 million.
Yeah.
So this is a pretty big bet. But he says in his budget speech, which we just heard that segment, we're going to save $60 million. I'm going to use that to help pay for this $202.04 aid per pupil, and I'm going to use it to pay salaries. There's 2%. So if the legislature, and there's a lot of questions, including by Joint Finance Co-Chairman John Nygren on whether this is a real deal. If they don't go along with this self-insurance, they have to backfill that $60 million, right?
Part of the concern from Nygren and others is that if you take 250,000 public employees out of their insurance pool in Wisconsin,
yes,
it shrinks the pool to share the risk and possibly drives up rates for everybody else. So while the state may save money, people like me who get their insurance through my wife's employer, our rates may go up. That's a big question.
Because you have less of your wife's employer has less of a patient pool to draw from.
Yeah. Now, Fitzgerald at lunch yesterday warned that this could be a big deal for Dane County. A lot of healthcare jobs in Dane County because of state employees basically being based here, university employees being here at UW-Madison. Mm-hmm. There's an issue there. But I do get the impression lawmakers looked for a way. If they don't want to do Walker's self-insurance, they will find a way to save healthcare costs. Now, what's that going to look like? You could, for example, increase the deductible from $250 to $500. You could require wellness programs. You could do all kinds of other things to push levers on these costs to bring them down. With state employees, what's going to be the benefit? You know, if you save enough money, can you put some back in their pay raise to try and offset? What's it going to look like? And two, what Walker did you have the double whammy of, okay, you got to figure out how to save that money that he's assuming or replace it, but also he's replace it in K-12. So he's tied it to a popular program that, you are the one who's got to go say, well, I'm taking money from you, schools, to cover health insurance for state employees. Well, who thinks that's a great trade-off other than state employees, who, for example? Who wants to do that? That's going to be a politically difficult thing for them to do.
And you were telling me the experience of the city of Neenah with Mayor Crawford.
I just heard that some localities will tell you that, municipalities will tell you that you can have good years where you run a surplus, but you can have bad years where, let's say you have a rash of injuries or sickness or whatever, then you take a hit and you lose money. And that's the thing that's going on here. The state is basically assuming the risk. If everybody stays healthy, and we avoid major catastrophic surgeries and emergencies, we do okay. Right. But if there's a rash, a run on stuff, that's what insurance is, right? Yep. It smooths out those bumps. You're taking out the smoother with health insurance, essentially.
Yeah. It's a big bet. I don't know whether this will be in the budget he signs in June or July. I really don't.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about tax cuts. One of the issues that we raised in last week's Rewind was whether there'd be some additional income cuts, and he fleshes that out. But let's listen to the governor for just a few seconds talking about the tax cuts that, at the end of this, he says totals $592 million. We'll break that down for you.
Fourth, we cut income taxes. As promised, income taxes in 2018 will be lower than they were in 2010. Overall, income taxes on a typical family will go down by more than $130 in this budget. So cumulatively, from 2010 to 2018, that's a savings of $1,542. Overall, the total new tax relief in our budget is $592 million.
Now, the income tax cut, we'll leave it to the CPA caucus to explain the details and get into the entrails. Mm-hmm. But the governor said it would save the average family of four $69 in tax year 2017 and about that much in 2018. And then he again, as he said in September, we've got the back-to-school sales holiday, that's $11 million in each of the years. And then he's taking the state government out of the business of collecting property tax, which is of forestry, which you and I pay when we write our property tax checks. And that's $180 million. So that gets you part of that. And then he's $160 million of it is offsetting property taxes for schools. So, but
he also includes fees in his total. So the $35 million tuition cut for UW, that's a tax break in his mind. Now they justify that other people have counted the same way, but anyway, what's interesting about the tax structure is he's going for the lowest two rates and expanding who is touched by one of them. This is part of, I get the impression, part of trying to avoid the whole, like, let's all the benefits of rich. He's purposely targeting, hey, lowest two brackets, they're going to get the break, we're directing it toward middle-income families and helping them the most. So there's that. There are already Republicans saying, why aren't we doing more for tax cuts? I mean, we're the party of cutting government. Why put so many millions of dollars into schools rather than doing a bigger bang for your buck, in Fitzgerald's words, with tax cuts? So that might change again.
And at that luncheon yesterday, Senator Fitzgerald floated an alternate idea. Talk about that a bit.
He's talked before about cutting utility tax. It's about $300 million. It's on your utility bill. But this is all part of that discussion about transportation. Might they cut a tax to direct money elsewhere? At this point, I think we talked before, the more I talk to people about Governor Walker's position, the less I think there's any chance at all he'll sign a gas tax hike in any way, shape, or form.
Well, he said it in the State of the State. He said it in the budget. Well, I'm glad you backed that up. Because when he says, let's not raise a gas tax, is that a wink-wink on if you raise the vehicle registration fee?
No. What he has said for months is, I will veto any budget that raises the gas tax or the registration fee without an offsetting tax cut. Now, at one point, lawmakers thought, okay, that's the deal. If we can meet that mark, we'll get a gas tax hike. No, that's just the start of the conversation. You get that point, but you don't even think about anything going on. But it's become clear he's not interested in revenue upper. And what he said this week in the address is, hey, we have enough money to do all these things without having to raise any taxes at all. We have enough money as it is. So he's going to do... He finds $100-some million to pull over from this. It's called the petroleum inspection fee. It's on your gas tax that pull it from that tax into transportation.
But it doesn't affect this budget. That doesn't start until the biennium 1921, excuse me.
But he's grabbing that money. He's found $100-some million to keep, 18151, 3990, 10441, and another state highway all on track. So he does that. I mean, he's saying, look, we've got plenty of money to go around. You don't need to raise taxes right now or raise fees right now. So that's what will be interesting to see is how lawmakers deal with that, because you have a couple options. If he's not going to allow you to raise registration fee or gas tax, can you pull more money from transport or from the general fund over? Well, if you do that, you're just moving money around and creating a structural problem where in future budgets, right, you don't have that money. So what do you do then? Do you try to cut a tax somewhere else and see, okay, Governor, we cut this tax. Will you sign this? My guess is no right now.
Well, this is a perfect time to listen to what the governor said about 40 seconds worth on his transportation budget. So let's go to that.
Our budget includes more funding for local governments to fix roads and bridges and potholes than they've seen in more than a decade and a half. It also includes the largest amount ever for the rehabilitation of state highways. This budget gets all the active major projects outside of southeastern Wisconsin back on track. It adds funding for the work of on Interstate 94 from the state line north through Kenosha and Racine counties. And it frees up resources to address the long-term transportation needs of the state, putting in place new reforms that will help lower the cost of building our infrastructure.
Jared, what I find most interesting is he had WISDOT, the Department of Transportation, in their September budget. They had $31 million to begin work on the East-West Freeway, which basically from Miller Park to the fairgrounds in Milwaukee. That's gone. And instead, he said, we're going to fund improvements to I-94 in Racine County, which is represented by Speaker Voss, the same Speaker Voss who said after the State of the State, if this I-94 project in my county is not funded, I'm not voting for the state budget. So a little sleight of hand there. I find that so intriguing.
Well, the governor justified a little bit this week by saying that he anticipates there's some local disagreement about 94 East-West, that may end up being a lawsuit. He doesn't want to deal with being in court, and then all put off. But the reality is that 94 North-South, there's a couple of things. One, Robin Voss has said I need to have that. Two, Van Wangard, the state senator who's from Racine, said basically bottom line is vote for the budget on 94 North-South. If it's not moving, I'm not voting for this thing. So that's a problem for the Senate, possibly. I have 20 Republicans right now, but you may lose a couple people. You don't want to lose many right off the bat. So, but $31 million is not enough to finish that project, because it's, I believe it's 8 lanes now from state line through Kenosha County, goes down to 6 in Racine, and goes back up in Milwaukee. So how do you get that going? That's one of the big questions for Speaker Voss, is can he get his caucus on board to pull more money in to do transportation? And then two, will the Senate accept that? Because it's not clear. Robin Voss is kind of driving the conversation about raising revenues for transportation. Fitzgerald and his caucus haven't really been saying we want more money. Now, there are members who do, but overall, it's not clear they have 17 votes in their caucus right now for a gas tax hike or any kind of big fee upper that would pull more money in. So you have this kind of interesting game of chess being played where Robin Voss wants revenue. He said, we have a deal in place, we as Assembly Republicans, to cut taxes $300 million, then to direct that money toward transportation. But Fitz hasn't said we're on board with that. So you have these three people playing a game right now.
But I want to come back to this because, first of all, I didn't know that the utility tax, which you and I see in the budget balance sheet, that's $300 million. That is very close to the offer that Assembly Speaker Voss and Assembly Republicans have said. So what's your understanding? If they do away with the utility tax, $300 million, and then transportation revenue uppers $300 million, does that have a chance of Walker signing
it?
No.
It's a gas tax hike. There's no incentive for Walker to sign a gas tax hike because of the tax shift. So if I'm Governor Walker and I cut taxes here but raise them here, what good is that for me politically? There isn't really upside for him right now. I mean, Governor Walker is not somebody who wants to raise taxes, period. And what he can say is, I held the line on taxes. I fought my own party to hold the line on taxes. I fought my own party to put more money in schools. I fought my own party about UW. That's a great reelection message, by the way.
Well, I understand. But now we're going to go to two assembly leaders, co-chairman John Nygren of Finance and Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, with about 46 seconds of their reactions to the governor's budget.
I think when you talk to citizens, they aren't so concerned about the total number. They're concerned about, first of all, funding their priorities, things that are important to them, and then their overall tax burden. So I'm not going to get caught up in the number, the size of the number, but I am concerned about the trajectory of spending, yes.
I fully support Governor Walker's plan to invest in the UW system. I do not support his plan to cut tuition. Our tuition is already among the lowest in the Big Ten, and I certainly think that we need to continue to invest it in financial aid so students of modest means can continue to go to the UW, but I would rather put that money to other purposes that we know are definitely not being achieved.
How are you guys not on the same page at this point?
Well, just because he's the governor doesn't mean that we just salute.
John Nygren is saying, I'm concerned about the overall level of spending. Let's go back to that. General fund spending of $34.5 billion, mm-hmm. An increase of 5.2% over the current biennium. And Robin Voss said, let me get this right, just because he's the governor doesn't mean that we just salute. Interpret that for me in terms of...
There have been tensions with Governor Walker and Republican lawmakers going back to his presidential bid in 15, where he was gone a lot during that budget process. And lawmakers felt like we got a bad deal or a bad budget from Walker, had to fix a bunch of things. He was out running for president. That creates some tension. And then two, they kind of felt like, and I'm generalizing here, but hey, we ran the show for a while he was gone. We're a little bit more emboldened because he wasn't around. There's still tension there, especially between the Assembly GOP leadership and the governor on this transportation issue.
Right.
And that's where this is coming to a head. I mean, if I had to bet, I will bet you will see more money in K-12 when this is all said and done.
Yeah.
I will bet you'll see more money in UW. I will bet you'll see a tax cut. I couldn't tell you, or I wouldn't want to bet right now, what will happen to transportation because of these three players here trying to, you know, figure out who's got the best hand.
Yeah.
Now, the governor has the most powerful veto pen in the country, he has the upper hand in all this. But what can they possibly do that would be palatable for him if they want to find more money for transportation?
Okay,
I'm not sure about that yet.
And let's take a few seconds to give the reaction of Democratic leaders to the governor's budget. Representative Peter Barca of Kenosha, the governor is putting forth budget proposals that are anemic attempts to address problems he has created, problems that have led to Wisconsinites feeling left behind by a rigged system and low approval ratings. And just a sentence or two from Democratic Senate Leader Jennifer Schilling. Families in western Wisconsin are tired of driving on crumbling roads and want stronger leadership to strengthen communities. Let's just stop there. Predictable reaction from Democrats. I didn't pick up, they're not offering any plan, long-term transportation funding.
They don't
say
have
it
to.
Again. They don't have to.
They're going
to
sit back and say, okay, you guys figure it out, and we're going to sit there and go, this is not working. The tough thing for Democrats is, what's their message? It's just not, it's not enough. So Governor Walker said, I'm putting X million dollars, $650 million into K-12.
Yeah.
It's not enough. I'm putting $140 into UW. It's not enough. I'm putting this much money in transportation. It's not. That's not the best alternative. I mean, he really has, politically speaking, it's a good budget. Now, it's going to go through some transformations, but politically, he's got a good budget on his hands.
Which leads us to your stock picks. And Mr. Walker?
I mean, look, most governors are going to get what they want from the budget, for the most part, in the end, right? 75, 80, 90%, pick your number.
I agree.
The
75.
Majority they get in the end. He has delivered a budget that, one, I think is the best rollout he's had since he started. I mean, I've heard that from a number of people this week. Because he began, you know, a couple weeks ago, rolling out these positive, you know, these positive themes about more money for schools.
The welfare reform, more money for schools, rural schools.
Politically popular
me.
Things.
Right.
Rolled that out very well. He puts his budget together that is set up to make Republican lawmakers the bad guys as they move money around. And thirdly, he can say, hey, they moved around. I fought my own party to do these things. They're priorities for you guys, which are politically popular.
Yeah.
That's a pretty good reelection message. Now, the governor can't be happy to see headlines about a liberal budget, which we saw in a couple of newspapers this week. He can't be. There are some conservatives complaining it spends too much. Mm-hmm. But overall, the message this week, from what I've talked to people, has been pretty darn good.
I agree. That's a good choice. Mixed.
So I'm sure you'll see this ad, Scott, because it ran on one station in one market during one TV show. But the NRSC, the Senate GOP's campaign arm, ran a spot on Sunday knocking Tammy Baldwin about the whole standoff over the U.S. Supreme Court nominee, right?
She's not going to vote against Judge
Gorsuch. She said they won't vote for him, and she wouldn't vote for cloture, which is, you know, basically the filibuster mark. So they're knocking her. She's out of touch. She's, you know, going back from where she was on before all this mess up. It's the opening shot of 2018 in some ways. That ad is not really going to leave a mark on Tammy Baldwin, but as an indication to people that she's going to be a target come 2018. Now, there's also this sideshow between her and Governor Walker on Twitter, this kind of back and forth, which for people like you and I is entertaining. But for real people, it's nothing. For their campaign supporters, it's a way to raise money. So I'm sure Timmy Baldwin was flying out emails last weekend about the NRSC hitting her and Governor Walker, you know, trying to take her on over Twitter. But, you know, it's just kind of interesting to watch. We're seeing the markers laid down already about next fall.
Senator Baldwin mixed. Falling.
So unions, I mean, let's go back the last 6 years. They had Act 10, Right to Work, prevailing wage repeal for local projects. Now look at this budget, what's happening this week. Project labor agreements. The Senate passed that bill. Oh, by the way, Governor Walker included it in his budget as well.
I'm glad you got to that. Yep.
Interesting move. Is he trying to take some credit for it or try to take a bargain chip off the table for lawmakers? But that's going to happen, it looks like. So that's
prevailing wage is also in there.
Repealing prevailing wage on state projects,
right.
Kind of fuller repeal. It's just, you know, it's just a further weakening of union power in Wisconsin. Now, for the union advocates, hey, this is also eroding family-supporting jobs. But for advocacy, look, it's also saving money because they argue that these agreements inflate the cost of projects. So you're seeing more. I mean, go back 6 years. It's been one thing after another for those guys.
Yeah. All right. Before we close, one little bit of trivia on the budget. If you're convicted of inattentive driving or driving while texting, the forfeiture would double from $20 to $40. You needed to know that, JR. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm JR Ross.
That's Rewind for February 10th.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.